This is the English Heritage Podcast.
Hello, and thanks for joining us for your weekly podcast into England's past. I'm Charles Rowe. Coming up, we unveil a new project that will allow anyone in the world to watch the sun, moon and stars above Stonehenge.
With Skyscape, we get a beautiful crystal clear view of how the sky will be. You can see the sort of track of planets as they sort of rise and set.
We find out about the role astronomy might have played in prehistoric life.
Sometimes people see astronomy as a sort of a very Western pursuit, but if you go into the depths, every culture across the world has been fascinating with what's out there.
And we'll explain how you can experience Stonehenge Skyscape. Details coming up in just a few moments with space scientist Dr. Maggie Adairin-Pocock. But first, let's see what else is on the horizon for future episodes of the English Heritage Podcast.
Today, in the modern age, there are many, many different types of jousting. But English Heritage are proud to present authentic jousting as it was, well-researched, using records to tell these stories of these rock star knights.
Essentially, humans have been wearing clothes for tens of thousands of years. So fashion history really stretches back as far as humanity.
So it's particularly the tradition of Fox's Book of Martyrs that I think has encouraged this black legend. And there's an element of truth in it, but there's an element of extremism in it. And of course, the term Bloody Mary, it taints the whole of her reign, whereas actually it is just one part of Mary's reign.
So that's just a sneak peek at what we've got coming up. And if you want to listen to previous episodes, just head to wherever you get your podcasts to catch up. Now, this week, following on from the summer solstice, we're back at Stonehenge, one of English Heritage's and one of the world's most famous monuments. It's all to tie in with the launch of a new English Heritage project called Stonehenge Skyscape, which will allow anyone in the world to see the movements of the heavens against the stones. And as we heard in our summer solstice episode, there's evidence that Stonehenge was not just built with the sun in mind. Here's English Heritage's senior properties historian, Susan Greeney.
There is also some indications that Stonehenge, in its early phase, is related to the movements of the moon. So the entrance to Stonehenge, the causeway, is possibly orientated towards where the moon rises. And the cremations, which are part of the first phase of the monument, are particularly located in the south part of the site, in a real cluster. And that's where the major standstill of the moon is. So that's a particular point where the full moon rises.
I put this astronomical evidence to another expert and the star of this week's episode.
So we're standing by the Neolithic houses, which is the recreation of Durrington Walls, the settlement near Stonehenge. And I'm standing with space scientist Dr. Maggie Adairin-Pocock.
Lovely to be here.
We heard from Susan in the clip that we just played that the sun and the moon are a key part of the Stonehenge celestial story. So for you, is Stonehenge an astronomical as well as archaeological wonder?
Yes. One of the things I'm fascinated about is archaeoastronomy and looking at archaeoastronomy across the world. And this is a fantastic site to see that at work. Because of the alignment with the summer solstice, it is nice to see an ancient site, but the ancients were also interested with what was going on in the heavens. And so they aligned the site with the summer solstice. And it's quite interesting to think of, you know, why they did that and what skill was needed to do that as well.
Archaeoastronomy, that's a new term for me.
It's the archaeology of astronomy. So I like to describe it simply as, you know, who knew what when. But sometimes people see astronomy as a sort of a very Western pursuit. But if you go into the depths, every culture across the world has been fascinating with what's out there. And so it's very interesting to see how different cultures have explained what they see in the heavens and explored it in different ways and built amazing monuments to it as well.
So what do you think was going through their heads as they found this site, and what would they have been looking at, and how would they have plotted Stonehenge around the movements of the heavens?
From my wandering around today, I've heard that this site was sort of a clearing. And so I think if we go back sort of the number of years when Stonehenge was conceived, I think there was sort of lots of forest around here. So this was a clearing. So I can imagine people from all around coming to this site to look and contemplate the heavens. And so the question is, I suppose, why did they build it? And how did they build it as well? Because to get the alignment that they have, the precision that they have, I think it must have been a series of observations over an awful long period of time to get sort of the exact alignment alignment correct? So, yeah, what drove them to do that? I find a fascinating question.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that will continue to be asked by every visitor who comes here.
Yes.
What role do you think astronomy might have played in that creation then?
So I think astronomy marks the passing of time. The solar calendar, so from solstice to solstice, you have a period of the year as the Earth goes around the sun. But I think some of the early buildings around here, some of the early constructions were also sort of possibly linked to the moon. And the lunar calendar is a sort of a fairly regular one. Over a period of about a month, you get the full range of the lunar phases. And I think that was something that early people latched onto. It was something tangible. You could see the phases changing. You knew where you were. So it's quite interesting to see how the moon and the sun can be sort of incorporated. And people wanted to understand that changing of time and mark that changing of time because, you know, no digital clocks or anything else. So how else do you mark the passing of time? And it sounds to me, if you look at Stonehenge, the passing of time must have been so important to them that they actually built this huge structure to actually sort of get a better grip with it.
Yeah, and to reflect, I think, on people who come before them and the generations who would follow.
Quite. So it is a sort of an ultimate timekeeping piece, which, yes, they wanted to last. And I think they were very successful in that so far.
Yeah, to me, I must say, it seems like a calendar, a watch, a temple. It seems so many things in one.
But as well as that, it is a sort of that idea that almost projecting outwards. So it is about the moon, it's about the sun, but also about the stars as well, I think. I don't know if there's any specific alignments, but I think it might have been a site where people came just to contemplate the heavens. And we see that across the world, people looking up and trying to make sense of what's out there.
I can imagine if you're standing on your own all night looking at Stonehenge and you've got all those wonderful views, it must be quite inspiring. And
as
a prehistoric person who's maybe spiritual, you know, it's a wonderful sight.
It is. And it's funny because I work on large telescopes now. I've worked in sort of telescopes in sort of Chile and places like that. And they are huge monuments to science. And in some ways, this is sort of a pre-science. I think it's a huge monument celebrating understanding, trying to get closer to what's out there.
That kind of leads me on to my next question regarding early science. But should we try and get a view of the early science that was been going on with the recreation, the CGI recreation in the visitor centre? We'll chat about it there.
Yeah, that sounds perfect. It's beautiful in there.
Well, let's go and have a look. This is where we start talking quietly because it's almost like we're walking into the temple.
Yes.
This is the CGI representation of Stonehenge Circle through time.
Yes, I love the way we're surrounded by it, as if we're in the henge itself. It takes us back to the very beginning, almost before Stonehenge was built, and takes us on a journey through time. So not through space, because we're at one location, but we can see, you know, time progressing and how the henge has sort of evolved over that period.
Absolutely. Let's see if we can stand in the middle as well. Where
I think
we
interesting acoustics in the middle.
Yeah, there are interesting acoustics. You can get a 360-degree...
reflection of your sound.
Exactly. Which is interesting.
Yes, unusual. But it adds to the atmosphere, I think. So my voice has been carried and sort of surrounding me as I'm surrounded by these beautiful stones.
And perhaps that might have been the effect for our ancestors when they built it.
Possibly, although because these walls are solid, you're getting much more reflection. Because there are gaps in the stones, in the real henge, I think sound would have passed through more freely. But we went out to Stonehenge this morning and stood in the middle, which was quite a monumental moment for me. I had to sort of gasp a bit.
Literally monumental.
Oh, yes, that's it.
In many senses.
Yes, and yes, it felt a bit sheltered from the wind, felt a bit protected in there. It's a nice spot.
Now let's go back to what we were chatting about outside, about the early science of Stonehenge. So you could say that Stonehenge is an early scientific, albeit we think also religious, instrument. How important a site is it both in England and the world?
So I think in terms of archaeoastronomy, the thing I was talking about earlier, I think it does very much give us a grounding. It's sort of a stake in the sand. It shows the understanding of our ancient ancestors. And I think although it's based here in the UK, I think it has global implications. It shows how our knowledge has progressed over many thousands of years, over many millennia. So I think it is important to everybody. And that's why I suppose it got the sort of UNESCO World Heritage Site, because it's something to be preserved and to be passed on from generation to generation, as it has been already.
You've been here this morning doing some filming before you spoke to us. Have you stood in the centre of the stones today?
Yes. So we woke up at around four, so we could see sunrise actually from the centre. And I must admit, my mind was blown. Inside, there's just something very grounding within the stones. That doesn't sound very scientific. But also, the engineer in me, I build satellites that go into space. And so looking at those huge blocks of stone and the challenge of actually erecting something like this, and also the drive to do it. We look at our modern technology and we're sort of pushing further. We're celebrating the 50th anniversary, for instance, of the moon landings. So that was a huge endeavour. And now we're looking sort of, yeah, we've sent probes out to beyond Pluto. So I think it's almost on that sort of scale, but it was on a more local scale. But to construct something like this, it's an engineering marvel.
And it makes you realise how far we've come. But even in those times, that would have been a remarkable piece of engineering and a huge human endeavour.
Quite. I think it shows the power of human endeavour. I think they're cheering the summer solstice there in the background. But I think it shows the power of human endeavour. That someone, I won't say a project manager, but someone came up with the idea of doing this. A group of people came up with the idea of doing this. And you know, stones came in from far and wide. And they were able to construct this. And it has sort of lasted the test of time. So I think it definitely shows something about, yeah, human endeavour.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Stonehenge Skyscape. And as we do that, let's come out of the circular area and we'll go and have a look at some of the models in the visitor centre down towards our left here. Talking about Stonehenge Skyscape then, can you explain what Stonehenge Skyscape is?
Yes.
And what interests you about it as an astronomer?
Yes. English Heritage are sort of developing a tool so people can experience, and what I experienced this morning to a certain extent, going to the centre of the stones and seeing the amazing vista of the sky around. I think this day and age, many of us live in sort of cities with high rises, tower blocks, things like that. So we don't get to see the horizon much. But this site is quite amazing in that you can see so much land around you. And so that means you can see so much sky. And I think the wonderful thing about the skyscape, it simulates exactly what Stonehenge is seeing at the time. And so during the day, photographs are taken from just off Stonehenge, because we can't put a camera in the centre of Stonehenge, but photographs are taken of the sky just beside Stonehenge, and they're superimposed on the stones themselves. So you can see, you know, what the weather's like at Stonehenge virtually right at the moment. But then in the night time, as an astronomer, I just love looking at the night sky. It gives me a certain peace which I can't really describe. But at the night time, because a cloud is a problem for most astronomy, there is a simulated view of the sky as seen from Stonehenge. So if you could take away the earth clouds, this is what the night sky would look like. And so people can actually go onto this website and do a sort of a 360 pan round, look up at the sky day or night, and see what is can be seen from the centre of Stonehenge.
As an astronomer, that must be a bit like waking up on Christmas morning.
When I first heard about the
it's
project...
completely pioneering, isn't it?
Yes, and I was very excited. And they showed me some of the early sort of renderings of it. And I must admit, there's something about Stonehenge and there's something about the sky, especially the night sky, which just gives me a profound peace. And so having the two together, it really was like Christmas morning.
So what else can you describe about Skyscape? It's not like a Google Street View.
No.
So these shots are sort of put together in a sort of 360, and you can scroll around.
Yes,
you can and scroll also, around on your mobile as well.
Oh, I believe so. But as well as that, you can go back through time. So if you wake up at sort of 7 o'clock in the morning and you I missed sunrise at Stonehenge, you can just actually go back in time and see sunrise as it was. So I love that sort of the travelling through time, because Stonehenge links us to our past.
And like the room that we've been standing in the circular CGI representation, you can also experience the seasons, I presume.
Yes. The camera isn't actually situated in the centre of Stonehenge, because of course you can't do that. But if there's snow on the ground, they have a representation of Stonehenge with snow on it. So it really does feel as if you're there, sitting in the centre of Stonehenge. And of course, with no other visitors, you have it to yourself. We live busy lives. And I think it's just a wonderful opportunity to sort of tune in to almost our ancient past and just get a moment of peace in a busy world.
Yeah, there's a real problem in the 21st century, I think, with getting back to nature. And you don't have to be spiritual, but I think if you get into nature, it's been proven that you do feel better.
For me, the night sky has always done that for me, especially the moon. It just gives me a sort of tranquility, a peace. And so to have a monument like this and to see the sky from a monument like this, I don't think it's necessarily about spirituality. It's different things for different people, but I think everybody can truly appreciate the sort of peace it brings.
Well, of course, the moon does have the Sea of Tranquility, doesn't it?
It does, yes. Which I think that's where they landed.
Yeah. Which is the first place where Neil and Buzz landed in 69.
So that's the end of the Apollo 11 mission, landed in the Sea of Tranquility. Seems appropriate, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And what should people look out for in the skies above Stonehenge when they're looking at skyscape?
Yes. Yeah, one of the feelings is that we are moving away from the night sky with light pollution, sort of busy cities. We don't see so much of it. And so with skyscape, we get a sort of a beautiful crystal clear view of how the sky will be. You can see the sort of track of planets as they sort of rise and set. Because of the way the planets orbit the sun, we can't see all of the planets all of the time. So for instance, currently in June this year, we can see Mars, we can see Jupiter, and we can see Saturn. And so all those are represented in the skyscape as they are positioned in the night sky. Now, one of the things they decided not to do is put planets like Neptune and Uranus, because we can't see those with the naked eye. And so I'm sure that the ancients would have been aware of these planets. I think they used to call them wandering stars, because their path across the night sky wasn't the path of the normal stars. Also, one of the fascinating things is, because Stonehenge is very much associated with solstice, you can see the maximum extent of the rising sun in the sky at noon, and also the minimum extent. So people aren't always aware that the sun rises higher in the sky during the summertime, when our part of the earth is tilted towards the sun, and lower in the sky during winter, when we're sort of tilted away from the sun. So you actually get the track of the full extent of the sun's above the horizon superimposed on the sky.
So it almost looks like a bit of an oxbow lake in the sky, really.
It does. Yeah, it does. So it brings us back to, I think, when they built Stonehenge, it was all about getting closer to nature, getting to understand, you know, the celestial mechanics. We've moved away from that, but I think skyscape really gives us that again. We can actually see, the sun does seem to rise higher in the sky when the days are longer. We take it for granted, but it sort of brings us back to those roots.
You talked about the sun, the moon and the planets there, the movement across the stones in the background. What about the constellations? Are there any that stick out when you're getting a view from skyscape?
Yes. All the constellations revolve around the pole star, the North Star. And so some constellations you can see all year, but of course some dip below the horizon. So for instance, one of my favourite constellations is the constellation of Orion, mainly because there's lots going on in there. There's a sort of nebula in there and sort of Betelgeuse, sort of lots of very different stars. But for the northern hemisphere, Orion is a winter constellation. And so you can track Orion if you sort of go to the skyscape regularly. You can see Orion in winter and then see it sort of dip below the horizon and disappear for a sort of a period and then reappear later.
So it's like a warrior going out retreating and then coming back into battle. Because he was a warrior, wasn't he?
Oh yeah, Orion, yes.
Orion's belt.
Yes, that's it. And the sword is there. So again, sort of, we take the constellations for granted, but by sort of regularly looking at skyscape, you can actually see, you know, what constellations are there all the time, what constellations disappear. Those constellations, if you look across cultures across the world in terms of archaeoastronomy, we have sort of constellations that we're familiar with here in the UK. But different people have come up with different dot-to-dots, effectively, making different pictures with those constellations. But of course, they're the same constellation, the same stars for everyone.
So it's great research for an aspiring astronomer or, you know, anyone who's looking to find out a bit more about the heavens.
Yes, well, because I think one of the biggest challenges we have with astronomy is the clouds. And the skyscape transcends that, because it gives us the view of the cloudless sky. And I must admit, some nights I'd love to get a view of the heavens. And so I'm going to be logging onto skyscape and appreciating what can be seen from here in Stonehenge.
Yeah. Lastly, Maggie, as we look at these four representations of Stonehenge through the ages, what do you think the legacy of Stonehenge skyscape will be for future astronomers?
I think primarily it gives that wonder. there's a pure joy of looking at the night sky. When we look out, we're looking into the past, how things used to be, because it takes a certain amount of time for the light to reach us. And we're looking at the past from the past. This was something built by ancient people to celebrate that night sky. So we're almost walking in the footsteps of our ancestors, looking up at the night sky and celebrating that. So I think it will definitely give people that. But on top of that, we're moving away from sort of our contact with the night sky. And I think with the skyscape, we can go and see the night sky, see how the night sky varies over periods of time, see constellations come and go, see the stars swirling around the pole star. This is something we can't do every day, but with skyscape, it gives us that sort of regular update from a fantastic location. So I think it might be generating some more budding astronomers in the future.
You've been listening to the English Heritage Podcast. To find out more about Stonehenge Skyscape, just do a search on the English Heritage website, where you can also see a video of Dr. Maggie and Susan Greeny talking about the project. We're back next week, discovering how Kenilworth Castle puts on a jousting event. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to leave us a review, and we'll see you next time.